welcome to your new life and our new times in what has been labeled as humanity's greatest leap in evolution. Dr. K is here to assist you with holistic tips and tools, clearings and activations for your vibrational upgrade. Dr. Allison J. K. has been working as an energy medicine practitioner for 20 years, having lived in Asia for 10 years to study subtle energy. People refer to Dr. K. as the lightning bolt due to the high voltage of the work she does on behalf of assisting you to thrive in mind, body, and spirit. That is the greatest backdrop to life on planet Earth right now.
Many of you have your kids going back to school now or next week or within the next few weeks, and there's probably increasing chaos with all of that noise of what to buy and getting them set up for their new year. And the teachers are already back and the pre-planning. Welcome back to the structure of the working year, school year. Kind of missed that rhythm. It was always really fun. I'm coming to you live right now from Costa Rica. I am in the Manuel Antonio National Park. And if I am quiet, you're going to be able to hear the fountain right next to me. We just had a rainstorm. It's rainy season here. And there's a bird, in case you heard that. So we might even get lucky and hear a monkey. I'm in the front part of where I'm staying, so I'm overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The back part of my door, I just saw a monkey when I walked back from breakfast this morning. So this and my Tuesday night group Theta Healing Calls, which if you want more information, you can go to my website and see under services there, are the only two things that I'm staying plugged in with professionally. All of my clients have been put on hold, my distant clients too, so that I can have these 3 weeks to rejuvenate and re-envision, kind of get pregnant with new vision, as we all need. This is my first almost total unplugged time since I've been back to the States 3 years ago. And I've started a lot of new ventures in the last 3 years since I've been back here. And as I bring in some other people, and I don't bring in other people in the different ventures that I've started that are new, it's been really interesting for me to get reunited with the, I want to say, American-framed mind. Because as you've heard on many of my other shows, you know, the 10 years in Asia really, especially as I was studying meditation and teaching it there with studying was with the mostly Chinese Buddhists. There was also some time spent in India when I got my yoga teacher certification. So I was with that form, the original form of where Buddhism came from. Buddha came from yoga sages, yogic sages. So he then took out the meditation part because it's five of the eight limbs of the yogic path. Only one of those eight limbs, as I've said on other shows, is actually the poses that we do in yoga classes here in the West. Five of the eight limbs were about working with the mind. And Buddha took that and went forward and taught what he did. And then Buddhism emerged, and then he traveled throughout Asia, and it became what it became as it met the different cultures with three different main schools of Buddhism. So then when I was in Taiwan for the 10 years, I encountered a different kind of Buddhism, Mahayana Buddhism. And then I was teaching it to traditional, varying degrees of traditional Chinese and westernized Chinese. And then when I would go on my month-long vacations at one time a summer in Thailand, I'd be with Theravada Buddhism, which is the Southeast Asian Buddhism. And then there's the Tibetan Buddhism. So those are the other three. And I've studied, interestingly, I've studied intensely with the Tibetan Buddhism. That's where Tantric Yoga comes from. And also the Shambhala tradition under Chogyam Trungpa. So coming back to the States and encountering and I taught meditation to American adults and American kids for, I think it was 3 years before I left for Asia. And being reminded from my clients and from my students in my yoga and meditation class what the typical American mind is like, because they get framed differently from the cultural backdrop. You know, we have different beliefs of what is possible. We have different beliefs of that gear our minds towards either being lighter and happier or possibly being more worried and concerned. And this isn't the show to talk about what effects are on the American mind. It's just to say that there's some help that can be had with how do we practically take meditation into our daily life, because really that's what we're looking at nowadays. And so that's what the show is going to be focusing on, is when we say yes to something new. Last week's show was on what happens in the body when we say no versus what happens in the body when we say yes. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, you might want to go back to that one. And the week before was actually the first time ever on air with my radio show. I've actually walked people through instructing them on meditation. And we actually meditated together using Buddha's most frequently taught meditation form. And I use this one whenever I teach yoga. It's in meditation. And whenever I teach meditation alone, when I am guiding other individual clients on their own individualized meditation program, for the busier minds, the more intellectually geared minds, I'll give them a mantra or help them choose a mantra, depending on what their needs are. And with the mantras, it gives the mind something to grab onto, so it has an assignment, because it doesn't know how to not have an assignment of something to do. The most basic Buddhist technique of meditation that Buddha taught himself the most and that I teach the most is without a mantra. It's just coming back to the breath. So if you want to go back 2 weeks ago and listen to that show, that will guide you through how to do it. What we're talking about today is how do we actually take what we observe in meditation and make it integrated into our lives as we are on our phones and walking and going into our car and at the mall or at the store shopping or helping our kids with their homework or having a conversation with our partner or doing business dealings. So that's called mindfulness in the meditation world. And basically you can think of it as meditation off the mat. So this is actually the fruits of the practice of meditation. And access consciousness works a lot. It's basically tools for mindfulness in action. All of the questions that you learn with access consciousness are ways to work with the mind. It's like cognitive behavioral therapy as well. It's to talk back to the mind. So from the meditation perspective, it's the same to a degree as the access consciousness perspective, where we are aware of our thoughts, aware of our conclusions, aware of our judgments that the mind has, and then we work with them. And that's from my background in psychology, that's where cognitive behavioral psychology comes in too, is to talk back to the thoughts. Interestingly, when we go to Buddhist monasteries, there are more classrooms than there are actually meditation halls or individualized meditation rooms. And in these classrooms is the dialogue over the sutras, interpreting the Buddhist scriptures and what the sages meant, as well as what is coming up in meditation. So you get guidance from your meditation teacher. How do you deal with your thoughts? So I'm going to give a really common example to start off with. You know when a mosquito is at you? I'm staying backed up to the jungle in the rainforest here. Manuel Antonio State Park here in Costa Rica is actually a rainforest. And it's the only, from what I know on the Pacific coast of Costa Rica, it's the only rainforest jungle that's backed up to the white sand beaches. North is Arenal, and there's some cloud forests and rainforests. So as I'm here in this setting, there's obviously tons of mosquitoes. I'm looking at some coconuts right now in a tree. And can you hear the bird chirping in the background? In the water, from the water fountain? Yeah, stillness. And that's what we're going to be at by the time we get to the end of this show, is how to sit with stillness, and in that stillness, how to have access to observing our thoughts and letting them just be, and then how to still say yes, even with our doubts and our fears that are what we're observing come up. So last night, this is, again, a really common example that a lot of meditation teachers have used and do use. When you have an itch and you're sitting in meditation, what do you do with it? Do you scratch it? So I tell my students, because I have, like, my yoga meditation class is almost half and half. I have steady followers, steady students who come every week, and they're making brilliant progress with their minds. Those of you who are listening know who you are, and you can hear it in my voice. It just makes me so joyous to see people gaining mastery over themselves and getting lighter and not being at the mercy of their thoughts. That scrunch down that happens with the face, that narrowed thinking that happens in the face, when, you know, you're at the mercy of your thoughts versus the wide openness of your face, where, and this is what my clients look like after an energy healing session, where underneath the eyes, at the top of the cheekbones, there's space. There's a lightness there so that the mind isn't, you know, front and focus and front and center of a person's life. And then the other half of students are people who just drop in and aren't regular meditators. And so what I say, ooh, I'm looking at a monkey on a tree right now. What I say to them is, if you have an itch, scratch it. You know, you don't need to set up any extra fights for your mind while you're in meditation, because in and of itself, the practice of sitting and observing the mind gets all self-conscious and it doesn't really like to be watched. You know, it's used to running the show. So we have enough going on there to work with when we realize we're thinking, to pull off of the thoughts and come back to our breath and exerting that discipline. That's even secondary. The primary, as I said 2 weeks ago on the show, the primary aspect of meditation practice is to just get yourself to do it. So sitting with an itch or having mosquitoes come at you, you could either fight the mosquito coming at you, right? You could start swatting it away. You could hit your skin where it just landed to try and kill it. Or you can just keep scratching kind of madly all around your ankles and feet where it's gathered, where it's kind of fluttering about. And the swatting at it, the scratching madly at the feet and ankles, is a good example of the wild mind, you know, the mind untamed, where you just follow your mind and you have a disturbance and so you react. Then there's the idea of, and this is going to sound preposterous to some of you, sitting in meditation. Now, that example wasn't when we're in meditation. That's just sitting there in daily life and being exposed to mosquitoes. And what do you do with it? Then there is the idea of sitting in meditation and a mosquito lands on you. And what do you do? So there's the possibility that, like I say to my beginning students, go ahead and just scratch the itch. You swat it away. That's a reaction in meditation lingo. A non-reaction, where we're just observing, but we're not at the mercy of our thoughts, where we have to react to what the thought says, is the mosquito lands on us and we observe the sensation. And with the feeling of the mosquito starting to take our blood, and then it flies away full with our blood, and our body in that area has the deposit from the mosquito and the sensation that then becomes within moments itching. That is an observed situation, I guess is the word. That's us with an awareness of, but not a reaction to or a reaction from our thought. So there's a sense of allowing there. There's a sense of surrender there. And many of us with a really strong ego are saying, and when I say really strong ego in this moment, I mean a really strong mind that is able and used to creating what it desires in life and putting out there onto the matrix of life what we are desiring, whether it be a new business or it be a new relationship or it be perceive me this way because I want to create this new relationship or new business in my life. And even when we walk out there, what I was just starting to get at that I was trying to say was when we have a conclusion in our minds that's not even a conscious one that we are aware of, that was way back when we were in 0 to 8 age range. And there was a conclusion that we were about who we are. We were told who we are by our family. And we used to walk around with that. We project that out onto the matrix of life. And we're telling people how to treat us. We're telling people how to react to us. So a really strong mind-oriented person projects their mind out onto the field. Now, we all do. We all do at all times because the consciousness, the field, the matrix that's out there is always right next to us. It's, you could consider it just another dimension, but that might be too ooby groovy or woo woo, so don't. if that languaging turns you off. It's just like if you put your hand out, there's the field around you, the invisible field. Actually, you should probably extend your arm, because our own invisible bodies that are around our physical body can go out to past the extended arm to the hand. So extend your arm and put your hand out, and then that's where you're starting to interact with the other than your own field, for dualistic purposes, to show the separation, like when in fact we're really joined. Our fields reach out, and I did this show 3 shows back, our fields reach out to the greater field, and we make an imprint on the greater field with our thought projections. So if we are highly cerebral and very much in our minds, then we're going to be more actively projecting out onto the greater field. If that means that that's the opposite flow, if you think of flows of energy, that's the opposite flow of surrendering, of allowing. There's a sense of force and pushing, because we're putting out. We're not sitting back and receiving. So if you just even, and I've talked about this before too, I'm a Qigong practitioner, for those of you who don't know, because I don't talk about my Qigong as much as my yoga and meditation in energy healing. The Qigong move of the pushing and pulling of the waves, we step forward and we put our palms out facing away from us, and we have 1 foot back and 1 foot forward, and our knees are bent and our elbows are bent, and we're pushing towards what the field is that I just described. And then the second half of the move is you drop your hands at the wrist and your palms are now facing your body, and you step back towards yourself, retreating. So there's 2 basic momentums in life. And this is one of the greatest teachings that I learned living in Asia overall, the teachings of how to work with the natural forces of energy. We don't have that kind of focus typically in America, where it's so basic or it's so fundamental. We're so much more about, you know, what we're creating out on the surface of life, and we're so much more extroverted here, that the awareness and schools of thought to guide us on how to work with the most ancient fundamental basics of life just isn't in our culture the way it is in other cultures. So like in the Chinese language, for example, qi is the life force energy. We use 3 words in English. We don't have even a language that has ancient terms to it. It's incorporated into our syllables and prefixes, but to a degree, when we have to then learn the Latin root. The everyday person speaking Chinese has a connection to these words with their basics of life expressionism. So clearing out any confusion you might have right now, all I am trying to say is that one of the greatest teachings, if not the greatest teaching I got from living in Asia for 10 years and interacting primarily with the Chinese culture, was the sense of the natural forces of energy that are at movement at all times in our lives, and how that would benefit us here in the States to go back to the basics at that level. So when we are actively creating stuff in our lives, and we're taking care of our family and duties and responsibilities in our business, and we're interacting with our friends and socializing, all of that is a sense of pushing. Unless, for example, we're in an interaction where we're just sitting back and we're listening. That's passive. That's surrender to the other person. That's surrender to in allowing them to speak and us to receive. We're not as good in America at receiving and surrendering and allowing. It's not, I mean, if you look at our cultural's iconic expressions, just do it, be all you can be, those 2 alone are all about the pushing energy. So when in meditation with the swatting at the mosquito example, do we just allow the mosquito to be, even if it's making us uncomfortable? Do we then swat the discomfort away? Do we then react to the discomfort? That's a high-level test for any meditator, to just allow a mosquito to bite you. I've done it before, and last night I was not doing it. I was definitely, after a day of harried traveling and only a few hours of sleep, swatting at my ankles and aware, nonetheless, that I was doing it, aware of the manicness of my behavior because of all of the decades I've spent doing this observation of my mind. So even still, that's a great benefit. You know, when you are allowing yourself to just be manic, you know that you're doing it. So now, with that sense of self-observation that gets cultivated in observing your thoughts in a meditation practice, or just even working with your thoughts and conclusions in the other tools and systems I mentioned, access consciousness, cognitive behavioral therapy, you can, instead of having fear come up and reacting to the fear, or instead of having the doubt come up like, oh man, why did I say yes to this? Because it's going to take this much time, it's going to take this much energy, and I really don't want to be doing that. I really would rather just do B instead of this thing A that I just said yes to. It's the natural mechanism, I think, of duality with a mind that's untrained. And so the mind's going to come up with its doubts, and you can look into the doubts. Like, are they authentic? What's the information in the doubts? So here we are surrendering to a slowed down rate so that we're even working with our thoughts. If we're reactive and at the level of the common everyday person where they're not working with their mind, then we'll just react to the doubt and then possibly cancel the thing that we said yes to, or withdraw from the thing that we said yes to. And there's a sense here of when we say yes to something, there's that expansion that happens, that body cells being able to get bigger, and we feel bigger. Not our bodies necessarily, but our energy just feels bigger, like we're projecting out and taking up more space with our energy. And that means just our feeling coming out from us. So if we've just had a really great interaction with somebody and we're feeling all good and yes inside, that's another way to say yes, then we'll walk away from that interaction and people might notice us more when we walk into a room than if we hadn't just come from a really great interaction where we were just saying yes and we were just kind of going about our business and with our mind having its thoughts and walking into a room, people might not notice us as much. So the yes energy is a more expanded energy. And again, that is honoring the spiritual energy. That is honoring our origins, because we come from an energy, the life force energy that some would call spirit, some would call soul, some could say life force energy. It doesn't matter how you language it in this day and age at this point, just so that you can understand conceptually what I'm communicating. That yes is a connection to God or divinity or spirit. And that the no is a connection to the mind. For dualistic purposes, to communicate a concept right now, I'm going to divide it that clearly of a contrast. So when doubt comes up, oh man, I don't know that I really want to do this. It's going to take up this much time and this much energy, and I really want to do thing B. Then that doesn't carry with it the same feeling, tone, or energy that of expansion and the upness, where we feel like we just got helped being propelled up in the air a little bit. That excitement that we're not totally, you know, just on the ground, but we're feeling up. It's the exact opposite tone, and that's more a mental tone. So how instead of creating, now let me come over to fear. So let's say instead of just being a few doubts, we then have been working with a coach or a healer or a therapist or a yoga teacher or a practitioner or a facilitator of access consciousness for a while. And we see ourselves about to have a breakthrough into a whole new level of living with a whole new level of freedom that we've never experienced before, where we've let go and dropped old conclusions about ourselves and about how we are in the world. And we've opened up to allowing ourselves to go for more and have more, receive more, allow more to come in. And we all of a sudden, on the precipice of this breakthrough, start to have this weird anxiety and this sense of disorientation almost. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. Am I crazy? I don't understand this new feeling, because it's so new. It's such expansive energy. It's such a huge yes to honoring our most fundamental nature, our spiritual nature, to expand and grow when we have just been contracted and not grown for a while. There's a rhythm to that. It's not constant expansion. Obviously, we're going to pull back and refresh and rejuvenate and not stay in the expansive energy. So it's like a back and forth, like the waves, like all rhythm of all life. Our non-digital clocks modeled that, like a cuckoo clock with the hand, not the hand, but the back and forth to second keeper, back and forth, back and forth. There's a connection in our Western society to the ancient rhythm of life, like I've been talking about. So fear and doubt, both of them are from the mind. Now, in this example, I mean, because you can go out and face a tiger and have real fear come up, but that's a different thing. That's not what I'm talking about here. So when we've just said yes to something and we go into fear or doubt, what we can do instead of, oh man, I really want to say yes to this. I've been having such a great time working with him or her, and I love how my life is changing, and I don't want to quit, or I don't want to. So you go into a reaction to the fear that came up from the breakthrough, or the doubt that says, oh, maybe you don't want to do this. And so then you start going back and forth in the questioning. Yeah, well, it still felt like a good opportunity. So now you're in that figuring it out mental land. Instead, what we could do is we could just pull back and observe the back and forth. We could observe the doubts, and we could ask the doubts themselves, okay, so you're afraid, you're doubting that you want to do this because of the time commitment. All right, is that real? Well, they said that I can choose how much time I put into this, and I know that at that time every day I have a lull in my time, so realistically, yeah, it could, the time commitment fit in there. Okay, so what about the energy doubt? You're not going to have enough energy to follow through on this change you're making. Okay, energy. Well, I've been feeling really good lately. I've been having a lot of energy, and this new opportunity makes me feel like I have even more energy. And I've been doing this chore, which I could probably ask him or her to do to allow me to have even more energy, because they've been asking to help more around the house. So they've been asking to help me more so I can be lighter and freer and happier. So it does. So you're, what I'm giving an example of is listening to the doubts for the information they provide and then working from there. So they don't, so neither the fear nor the doubt gets to be some big boogeyman that just is like this loud at the back of the mind. You address it, and if it's authentic, you act on it. And if it's inauthentic, you let it go. Just like in meditation. Thinking. No matter the content of the thought. Happy, sad, good, bad. Pull off of the thought and come back to the breath. So there's this steadiness. There's this fundamental trust and faith in the knowing of that your being has. Getting grounded in what Chogyam Trungpa calls basic sanity from the Shambhala Tibetan Buddhist tradition. Getting grounded in the basic sanity that runs through each of our beings when we move beyond just coming from our minds. There is such basic sanity there, y'all. I mean, it's just, it's that sense of calmness, that sense of groundedness that I've been told I have, that I know I have, that you experience with others. You just feel like everything's okay when you're around them, because they're not at the mercy of their minds. So says the heavens. Can you hear the rain? I'll be quiet for a moment. Yeah. It's a little rainy season here, just like it was in Florida, but I'm in a rainforest right now. It's so brilliant. Nothing any better than this. What else is possible for my excess friends and family? So I'd like to read something now, shifting gears a little bit for the second half of the show. This is from Sri Ramakrishna, Hindu tradition. Once a man was about to cross the sea. Vibhishana wrote Rama's name on a leaf, tied it in a corner of the man's wearing cloth, and said to him, "Don't be afraid. Have faith and walk on the water. But look here. The moment you lose faith, you will be drowned." The man was walking easily on the water. Suddenly, he had an intense desire to see what was tied in his cloth. He opened it and found only a leaf with the name of Rama written on it. "What is this?" he thought. "Just the name of Rama?" As soon as doubt entered his mind, he sank under the water. So, what is that teaching? As soon as you give in to the fear or the doubt in a way that doesn't allow you to have the trust or have the faith grounded into just a basic knowing of the basic sanity and the basic goodness that each of us has. When we start to give into that part of the mind, that is the energy of doubt or the energy of fear or the energy of not enough or the energy of scarcity or the energy of worry or the energy of lack. As the storm kicks in a little bit, isn't that great? We had thunder that you guys caught and then the sky opened up and now it's pouring. I'm sure you can hear the rain behind me as I'm talking about scarcity and lack versus abundance and lushness. Thank you, universe. How's it getting any better than that? I live in the space, y'all. You know, I mean, we are so projecting. Somebody else could look at it like, oh, damn it, I wanted to go outside and play. And there's that sense of allowing it to be as it is, balanced with taking action at the right time based on intuitive awareness. So when we quiet the mind with its thoughts, when we address the doubts and the fears that can feel like this negative backdrop of this constant humming energy that we're not even listening to articulated thoughts necessarily, but it's just this backdrop of anxiety. That's what I work with the most frequently in my practice as an energy healer and a yoga and meditation teacher. We were talking about 90% of the doctor's visits in America are due to stress. Hi there, y'all. Thanks for your patience. The rain is coming down. I don't know if you can hear it. So it was at a really important point. It's kind of funny, too, that it chose to cut out there because maybe we're not going to talk much about stress. Or maybe what I was saying was just so big that we needed some space before hearing it again. So that sense of being stressed, when you're in the midst of having your family demand stuff of you, and you're in the midst of having to take care and or having to and you have all these things coming at you, or it's just simply day to day, and it's not in necessarily a peaked moment, but it's just a busy day, our everyday lives, if we're able to have that awareness of there is basic sanity, there is basic goodness in me, my thoughts are just surface level noise that are disturbances on the surface of this fundamental basic sanity and basic calm. That is the nature of this whole spiritual path. That is the nature of learning to meditate and work with the mind. So in our everyday lives, when we start to get that feeling, so you've got to catch it. All right, let me take a sidestep for a second. One of my clients who's had asthma, she had an inhaler. And what we learned to do, or what I showed her how to do, and she successfully does it nowadays, is she learned the mind-body connection between her anxious thoughts and her shortness of breath. And so I taught her a breathing technique or a pranayama from yoga after she understood that it was a connection between her mind and her bodily reaction, and we were able to slow that down and then have her start to breathe. So there's this basic humming that can happen in the back of our minds in America or in the West or in any modern culture that doesn't have, I'm not going to say that doesn't have, modern life. We can get really busy. And so there tends to be this common that I feel everywhere in our culture, that I don't feel in other cultures. There's this backdrop of angst or of worry or of anxiety that is just the humming of the mind because it has so much to attend to. So what if you knew that that's what it was? What if you knew that you weren't necessarily anxious and you weren't necessarily needing to lower your blood pressure, but instead you were able to understand that your body was running as taut or tight or non-expanded or as contracted as it is because your mind was having this murmuring of fears and doubts that you never addressed on a day-to-day basis from observing your mind, but instead you let become just this constant backstage of murmuring. Because that's exactly what we're talking about when we're looking at a host of bodily effects from an unmanaged mind that is allowed to run wild with its worries, fears, doubts, instead of the calm, grounded knowing that I can address every single one of my thoughts. And if it's a fear that I'm going to die, well, then let me look at that. Do I want to die? Is it my time to die? And if it is, there's nothing we can do about it. And then we seek out the necessary help in order to counsel us. I was just talking to an 85-year-old client the other day, and he was saying, Allison, I don't think it's so much as that people are afraid to die as much as they're afraid of how they're going to do it, how it's going to happen. So if that is your fear, then talk to others. Read books that talk about that. Get yourself calmed if that's the bottom line fear. So let's come off of that bottom line fundamental fear of death, and let's go to a more common everyday one. You can address any and all fear and any and all doubt that comes up with the technique I said earlier, in that you can just look at it. What's the information you have? Or do I in fact have enough? And then you could go through the thinking like I was modeling earlier, where you realize I can do it, and that it is not an authentic doubt. It's actually an inauthentic doubt. And then you can remember me saying that it is an automatic mechanistic reflex. Those of you who remember going to the doctors and having their knees hit with those weird material hammers from the doctor to just check our knee reflexes, that our foot kicks out, our knee gets hit in a certain spot. The mind does that with doubt and fear as soon as we start to say yes to becoming more, or becoming bigger, or stepping out more, and no longer contracting back into the everyday smallness that we keep ourselves habituated at on our sofa after work, watching TV, numbed out because we've worked so hard that day and we just want to unwind and relax. So on our internet, or playing games, gaming, whatever it is you use, in any moment, you can either just dismiss them, thinking, let it float by, let the river's current, as if my thoughts were a leaf on the river's current, just take the thought away and let me come back to the present moment. Let me come back to the breath, and not give power to the breath. Pardon me. Not give power to the thought, the fear, or the doubt. Or, okay, so you're afraid of what? Even though you may be sitting there talking to somebody and you have your mind come up with a doubt about this person, you could say, is that authentic? Yes or no? And then choose accordingly. In Access, we say choice creates awareness. So we make a choice. Let's say we say yes to this new thing, and we step out and we're trying something new, and we become aware of a new skill we have. So then we choose to do something else based on that new skill. And that's where we build a new life. Choice creates awareness. We could also step out feeling that, wait, it has like a hit in our body, and there's like substance in our body, and it stays with us, and it's not fair. And you can listen to this over again and work with the differentiation that I'm making between the different energies. So the thoughts tend to feel less substantial if that person is in fact inauthentic, and we're just sitting there with our mental machinery just kicking out a doubt because that's what it does. Then you know that, versus the almost bodily kind of, yes, that feels right, this person is authentic, then don't go forward with this person. So just using our thoughts to inform us and not let them ever be a threat. Go into it. One thing that I've said for years now is follow the fear all the way through. Okay, so if you're afraid that this new venture will fail, what happens if it does? I'll be out all of the energy and time. Okay, and so what will happen then? Okay, so you get to the bottom line, fear of death, and then deal with that one. You know, so it's a sense of active and this is what Tibetan Buddhism talks about, and the Dalai Lama talks a lot about, is active talking back to the thoughts, active addressing of the thoughts. It's cognitive behavioral therapy, like I said. We do this in Access Consciousness, and it's an active mindfulness. It's how you carry forth the skills of learning to pull off of the thought, to disempower the power that we give the mind, and to come back to the breath, meaning the basics of life, the fundamental energy that allows us to be alive. Because the mind is such an animal. All righty, thanks you guys for your patience. The storm is about to pass, so it seems like that's it for our interruptions. There's nothing to be afraid of. This is the bottom line. This basic sanity and this basic goodness that we all have. And if somebody that you're interacting with, you're smelling that they don't seem to have basic goodness and the thought comes up with the doubt that I talked about earlier, then trust it. Ask the doubt, is this authentic? And if it's a yes, then don't interact with that person. You can handle anything. You know, you have a basic goodness to you. You have a basic sanity to you. You have a fundamental nature to you that can handle anything. And your thoughts are just that. They're just thoughts. They're only substantial when we choose to react and fight against them. So if desires that we haven't bothered to listen to, like, I don't want to be working this hard. I don't want to be pushing this hard. This isn't right. I'm tired. I don't want to be this stressed out. Even in the very midst of creating your best life ever, you're stepping out and you're saying yes. And you have a doubt come up and a fear come up. As I said last week and this week, it is natural. It is a reflex of the mind to do that when we expand at the spirit with the soul level by saying yes and becoming more and choosing more for ourselves and growing and expanding. The mind goes into contraction. They're different energies. It's almost like they're a brother and sister who fight whenever one of them gets a present and the other one doesn't. So in knowing, choice creates awareness. So this has been a heck of a show. It's probably going to require a re-listen because this is a lot of information, as usual for me, because of where I come from, to delivering this to you to be able to really grab onto it and implement it in your life, going from the most basic level to the most advanced level. So here you are in your life. You're saying yes to more opportunities, and you're saying yes to expanding, and you feel like you're afraid. You're on the precipice of this breakthrough and you're afraid. Just know that that's natural and then move through the fear. Allow it. When I say move through the fear, what I mean is allow it to be the mosquito biting you. In the knowing of the naturalness of fear to come up when we are expanding to this whole new level and it's a hearty breakthrough, it is a completely natural mechanism for the fear and the doubt to come up. Let it come up, observe it, and keep choosing yes anyway. And eventually you're going to have more of an accumulated savings and more accumulated deposits into the saying yes and into the choosing more for yourself and into the momentum built into choosing more for yourself and believing that something else is possible for yourself instead of what you see everybody else around you creating in this reality or the majority of people creating in this reality. You're going to continue to open up, asking questions. Okay, so how does it get any better than this? What else is possible? Again, from access and seeing what your intuition guides you to. Okay, so invest here. Okay. And you do. Okay, so start this new venture. You got to be kidding me. Mind says, start this new venture. It's totally illogical. It's irrational. So protest the mind. Look into it. Is it illogical? Is it irrational? Or is it actually just of a different type of logic where it's following what seems to be more the wildness, the rawness of the intuitive life? Because in the intuitive world, we're tapping into a primal, primordial energy that sustains all life. And it is not always going to appear logical or rational. I'm not saying go out there and be as irrational as possible. Obviously, I'm not saying that. I am saying that there's a different texture to those two forces. The mental energy has a different texture than the wildness. The reason, the logic, the rationality, the lockdown that the mind is given to us to create in our lives, in our bodies, to give us the structure we need in a physical body on planet Earth, to be able to structure out all of the incoming data in a way that we can handle. That's the mind's job. It doesn't do well with that intuitive rawness and wildness of our spirit or soul, because that's not its region. That's not its domain. That's not its department. That's not its specialty. So in knowing that when you say yes frequently following intuitive hunches, you're working at a soul level energy. You're working at a spirit level energy. You're not working at a mental energy. So in comes the baby brother or the baby sister or the older brother or the older sister full of their fear and doubts and protests that, oh, you're stepping out and doing something different. And they have their resistance to it. And that's the mind. So in knowing that this dynamic exists and in knowing that you can always just question the thought, if it isn't easily let go of, if it starts to have that nagging ability, then question it, look into it, ask it, dialogue with it. Or just simply ask it and then assess its energy. Is it genuine and authentic? Or is it just mental error kind of energy? And then choose accordingly. It's an amazing, amazing time to be on our planet right now. There are such amazing, beautiful, brilliant, high supportive energies, the astrological configurations that continue to happen in the stars. Okay, so in closing, I just wanted to say thanks for listening. Thanks for choosing more for yourself. Thanks for being another person who is raising their own vibration, lightening up the density that the mind has, the dominance that the mind has, so that it makes it more available for others. Just by you modeling it and just you doing it in energy, it opens up more possibilities for all of us in the invisible field to grab and make into our physical reality, that 100th monkey theory. So if you guys want help, go to AllisonJK.com. Look under services, the group Theta Healing Call. Those calls are just growing, and they're fantastic. Ability to just clear people's blocks towards change. It's so fun, and I welcome you to choosing more for yourself, and this is one of the ways people are doing it. So AllisonJK.com, the link's down there in the bottom right, Group Theta Healing Calls. Many blessings. Have the best weekend ever. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us and allowing yourself this time to expand and become more of who you're here to be. Dr. K has a range of different offerings of her vibrational upgrades at all price points, including free. So for more information, please go to www.allisonjk.com. Dr. K's first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, is available on Amazon.com. Dr. K also has a weekly clearing and activation call that is attended by her most advanced clients and students, an important activity in keeping themselves aligned and their vibration high. We'd love to have you come and play. Om Shanti.